Welcome to International Trade Minute Quickfire Trade News, the essential podcast for today's trade professionals, presented to you by Riedel Law Firm. If you're a seasoned practitioner, this is where you'll find your weekly distilled briefing on the pulse of international commerce and regulation. We bring you the latest legal and trade news, distilled into straightforward, bite-sized updates for busy trade professionals. Sponsored by Riedel Law Firm, this podcast is crafted by expert trade attorneys to keep you ahead of the curve with concise, actionable insights. Perfect for your morning commute or coffee break. Stay informed without the fluff. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and join our professional community on LinkedIn. Today, we are exploring significant developments in international trade enforcement with a focus on BIS export control actions, Trump's new Venezuela oil tariffs, the widespread opposition to Section 301 port fees, and critical changes to de minimis rules for imported goods. Let's get started. The Bureau of Industry and Security, BIS, is intensifying export control enforcement, with several major cases expected soon. Commerce officials recently reported nearly $5 million in criminal penalties issued last year, an increase from prior years, and signaled that this trend will continue. BIS's efforts have resulted in over 80 arrests, more than 100 DOJ indictments, 1,440 end-use checks in 60 countries, and 3,000-plus outreach activities. Officials promise interesting cases ahead, underscoring the need for heightened compliance vigilance. BIS is intensifying its enforcement focus on Iran, following President Trump's directive to increase pressure on the regime. Commerce officials confirmed a global surge in end-use checks and a significant resource shift to counter Iranian procurement networks. The agency described its efforts as a robust and continuous campaign to block sensitive U.S. technology from reaching Iran, especially in light of concerns over Iranian drones being supplied to Russia. BIS has doubled its university outreach program from 20 to 40 institutions, signaling a stronger push to safeguard research from unauthorized technology transfers. Launched in 2022, the initiative aims to improve compliance at universities identified as higher risk. A commerce official noted the expansion reflects BIS's growing commitment to research security. Trade professionals advising academic institutions should view this as both a resource and a signal to bolster compliance efforts. Up next, President Trump has announced a new secondary tariff, imposing a 25% levy on all U.S. trade with countries that purchase oil from Venezuela. The measure, set to be formalized by April 2, 2025, dubbed Liberation Day in America, will apply to nations including China, the top buyer of Venezuelan oil. Trump confirmed the tariff would stack on top of existing IEEPA and Section 301 duties. This move marks a new approach to sanctions enforcement and could significantly strain U.S. trade ties with countries like India, Brazil, and several in Europe and Latin America. The implementation timeline remains unclear, particularly whether the tariffs will apply retroactively to recent purchases or only to future transactions. Trump justified the action by claiming Venezuela has purposefully and deceitfully sent to the United States, undercover, tens of thousands of high-level and other criminals, and characterized the country as very hostile to the United States and the freedoms which we espouse. This measure creates a complex tariff environment for international businesses, especially Chinese companies already navigating multiple layers of U.S. trade restrictions. The Office of the U.S. Trade Representative's proposed remedies for Chinese dominance in shipbuilding are facing substantial opposition from a broad coalition of importers, carriers, and port operators. In public comments, these groups have argued that imposing fees on vessels bringing imports to U.S. ports would have far-reaching negative consequences for American commerce and consumers. Moving on to our next piece, industry representatives cite alarming projections that more than 80% of container ships calling at U.S. ports would be subject to these fees based on their Chinese connections, whether owned by Chinese companies, built in China, or ordered from Chinese shipyards. Many critics contend that the fees would punish past actions rather than incentivize future business for Japanese, South Korean, or American shipbuilders. A particularly pointed criticism is that these remedies appear more aligned with trade protection than with changing China's behavior, which several commenters argue strays from the original congressional intent behind Section 301. World Shipping Council President Joe Kramick testified that generating demand for domestic products and raising government revenue are not permissible bases for actions under Section 301. The practical implications of these fees could be severe. Analysis indicates that an average-sized ship loaded with 6,620-foot equivalent containers could incur nearly $6,350 in fees per 40-foot container, approximately double the combined inbound and outbound spot rate for the New York to Rotterdam route. This dramatic cost increase would inevitably be passed on to consumers. Port operators have expressed particular concern that the fees would incentivize vessels to visit fewer ports per sailing, causing significant congestion at major ports while potentially devastating smaller and medium-sized ports that would lose crucial business. Regional ports like Oakland, Norfolk, and Charleston could be disproportionately affected, threatening their economic viability. While industry groups voiced strong opposition to the port fees, the public hearings also showcased significant support from labor unions who filed the original petition. The United Steelworkers testified that their members stand to benefit directly from an expanded shipbuilding sector as they produce maritime paint, cabling, vessel engines, and steel used in ship construction. Their testimony emphasized that USTR's proposed relief measures provide a strong base upon which to rebuild our shipbuilding capacity, protect our logistics interests, and restore maritime power. Union representatives didn't limit their advocacy to the fees alone, also calling on Congress to make additional investments in shipbuilding capacity and workforce development to maximize the potential benefits of these trade remedies. The Coalition for a Prosperous America, though not testifying in person, submitted a forceful endorsement of both the fees and tariffs on Chinese cargo handling equipment. CPA directly countered industry criticisms, describing the service fees as a strategic and proportionate response to China's unfair practices, and characterizing the proposal as an innovative approach to restore a sustainable domestic shipbuilding base. CPA also dismissed concerns about importers rerouting shipments through Mexico or Canada to avoid the fees, actually endorsing an additional 10% service fee on shipments entering the U.S. via land borders to ensure fair cost distribution while deterring tax avoidance strategies. This stark divide between labor and industry perspectives highlights the complex trade-offs between rebuilding domestic manufacturing capacity and maintaining efficient global supply chains, a tension that lies at the heart of this contentious trade policy debate. The practicality of implementing the proposed port fees has raised significant concerns among stakeholders, with many questioning the operational feasibility and economic consequences. Industry groups have pressed the USTR for greater clarity on several critical aspects of the program, highlighting substantial knowledge gaps that could hamper compliance. The National Retail Federation and Retail Industry Leaders Association specifically questioned how USTR would determine the percentage of Chinese ships in a carrier's fleet and monitor changes over time. They also sought guidance on how vessel sharing agreements and shipping alliances would be assessed under the new framework, since these common industry practices complicate fleet ownership metrics. Additional operational questions remain unresolved, including who would collect the fees and through what mechanisms. This administrative uncertainty compounds the financial concerns, as the World Shipping Council projected that an average-sized vessel carrying 6,620-foot equivalent containers could incur almost $6,350 in fees per 40-foot container, roughly double the current round-trip shipping costs on major routes. Regional ports face particular vulnerability, with industry warnings that the fees would incentivize vessels to make fewer port calls per voyage, potentially causing significant congestion at large ports and the collapse of business lines at small and medium-sized ports, like Oakland, Norfolk, and Charleston. The U.S. Virgin Islands government highlighted a particularly severe case, noting that smaller vessels serving their islands would face disproportionate impacts, potentially increasing shipping costs by 250% and creating massive inflation and economic hardship upon a jurisdiction already high in poverty. Business interests have mounted a substantial opposition to proposed regulations that would remove Section 301 tariff subject goods from de minimis eligibility, with most comments to Customs and Border Protection highlighting serious concerns about implementation and economic consequences. We continue with our next story. Business interests have mounted a substantial opposition to proposed regulations that would remove Section 301 tariff subject goods from de minimis eligibility, with most comments to Customs and Border Protection highlighting serious concerns about implementation and economic consequences. Most stakeholders argue the proposed rule is unworkable under current systems and would significantly raise costs, ultimately burdening consumers. Even supporters of the change urged a transition period of 12-18 months. Groups like the E-Commerce Innovation Alliance and the National Association of Foreign Trade Zones proposed using FTZs for low-value imports or narrowing the rule's scope to target high-risk goods or bad actors. The National Foreign Trade Council warned a $32 item could cost $82 after broker fees and duties, disproportionately impacting lower-income consumers. Implementation challenges loom large, especially for hybrid shipments containing both eligible and non-eligible goods. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce noted that imports covered by Chapter 99 cannot use the informal entry process, meaning they would incur a $32.71 merchandise processing fee instead of the $2.62 fee used in CBP's own cost estimates, a discrepancy that undermines the rule's economic analysis. A key issue in the de minimis debate is the uneven treatment of postal and commercial shipments. USPS argues it must accept international parcels under treaty obligations, unlike private carriers. This could create a loophole, as shippers may switch to USPS to bypass stricter controls. FedEx disputes USPS's stance, citing legal authority that allows postal operators to restrict non-compliant items. Another challenge is duty collection. USPS would need to collect duties, CBP fees, and its own clearance fee. If recipients refuse to pay, USPS could incur unreimbursed costs, including return shipping and possibly still owe duties to CBP. Technical limitations compound these challenges. The USPS noted that the restriction applies to Chinese goods regardless of shipping origin, yet advanced data doesn't cover country of origin. While USPS can require six-digit HTS codes beginning September 1st, this doesn't reach the granularity needed for Section 301 tariff determination. These implementation realities have led the Express Association of America to warn that without equal application across shipping channels, the rule would simply redirect shipments rather than achieve its intended enforcement goals. For our concluding piece, Commerce Department officials have issued strong recommendations for companies to implement end-user and end-use statements across all export transactions, not just for highly controlled items, but also for less sensitive ER99 goods. This guidance marks a significant shift in compliance expectations. When companies ask me when they should request an end-user statement, my answer is simple: all the time, explained one commerce official at the recent BIS annual update conference. It's just extra due diligence that can make all the difference. These statements serve as critical risk management tools, potentially uncovering red flags that might otherwise remain hidden. Officials provided a telling example. An exporter selling an EAR99 steel cable might receive an end-use certification specifying a highly unusual application. This response itself creates a red flag where none previously existed, triggering further scrutiny. The statements also provide valuable liability protection, with maximum penalties now reaching $374,474 per violation following January's inflation adjustment. These certifications demonstrate due diligence efforts that can significantly mitigate potential penalties if items end up being misused. Officials acknowledge that export controls aren't a wall, they're a net, conceding that sophisticated actors might circumvent even the most robust compliance systems. However, they emphasize that companies who implement comprehensive vetting processes, including requiring these statements, substantially reduce their enforcement risk. For businesses concerned about adding bureaucratic burden, officials framed it as a simple risk-reward calculation. If adding one more form significantly lowers your risk without substantially increasing transaction costs, it's worth implementing. Thanks for tuning into International Trade Minute. We hope you found today's episode insightful and useful for your practice. Remember, our podcast is brought to you by Rydell Law Firm, your trusted partner in navigating international trade law. Don't miss our next episode. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Stay connected and continue the conversation with us on LinkedIn. Until next time, stay informed and stay ahead.